step one for me was, I'm obsessed with the number three for some reason, is I started just making myself and my leaders pick three things, no more than three things that we're ever going to communicate, preferably one. But if it's three, we got to get into one message. So we're going to have one cohesive message.
On this podcast, we speak with Craig LeMasters, former CEO of Assurance Solutions and current CEO of GXG Consulting. During his tenure at Assurant, Craig more than doubled revenues by repositioning the financial services giant and is now disrupting the consulting business. You're listening to CEO Voices, Leading with Communication, with your hosts, June West and Steve Soltis.
I want to step back in time. Let's go sure. back 15 years ago. As you mentioned, at this point, you're approaching a 20-year veteran with Assurant. You've been there. Assurant Solutions, a $2 billion operation. And you find yourself all of a sudden at the top, leading the helm of a $2 billion company, which by any standards is a significant business. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you walked into on that first day and how you got, specifically how you got to the process, came to the conclusion that, hey, we need to supercharge. We need to transform this business. Take it to something that it currently is, you know, currently isn't. And what were the fundamentals that led to that decision, Craig?
Yeah. So the first question, Steve, the first day is a fun one for me because I don't think anybody's really prepared, fully prepared to do those jobs. I mean, I was very fortunate to. I felt like I was very fortunate just to get to the job. I wasn't gunning for it. I wasn't had some big master plan, but the board picked me to do it. And I walked in the first day, and it's a true story. Got on the elevator like I had every day since I'd been working there, and packed elevator, rush hour, and everybody stopped talking. And I just thought that was kind of odd. So I thought maybe I'd missed something. There was some big corporate problem. And I'm like, hey, you know, what's up? And nobody would really talk to me. I got off the elevator, went to my new fancy office in the corner, and my longtime executive assistant's there. And I'm like, Debbie, here's what happened. And she literally looked at me and said, you don't really get like what you do now, do you? And I'm like, well, what do you mean? I got this cool new job. She's like, you know, we got to go in your office and talk. You don't get it. I said, I know all these people and they wouldn't talk to me. She says, yeah, but it's different because now their livelihoods, their future, everything that they're counting on, that's you now. And so that whole relationship changed yesterday. And I'm like, wow, why didn't anybody tell me that yesterday? So that was my first day experience, to be perfectly candid with you. And I share that a lot in our coaching practice now because I don't think most people are ready for that. But I did know, fortunately, I knew going into the job, in all seriousness, why I was picked for it was I'm just kind of a growth guy. I've been obsessed with helping enterprises grow, and that's probably what I was pretty good at. And we were, to use my vernacular now, we were stuck. I mean, our business model was pretty tired. It had a great run, but the future was not great. So I would love to say that I had some big strategic aha and said, hey, I'm just going to go morph the company into something wonderful. I'm looking at it going, you know, this $2 billion could go to $1 billion pretty quickly. And I think it would feel a lot better if we got it to $4 or $5 billion, which we ultimately did. And so it was kind of, I was, in that sense, I was pretty fortunate because I knew we had to do some things differently. Now, what we had to go do in the journey to get there was super hard and painful, but that was the rich learning. So that was my first week on the job, if you will.
Let's go back to the to the elevator. Here you've got these folks now who aren't speaking to you. Everyone's being quiet because the CEO's on the elevator.
Yeah.
So how did you look at the folks that you had worked with now for so long and choose the influencers and change agents to help you move the company from this credit risk to warranty?
Yeah, so... No, I think, June, it's a wonderful question because... one of the few things I'd relied on to get up to this point when I became CEO was around, and I would say if I telescope back broadly, people, talent, both selecting, retaining, and helping. And so it was my first priority on the job because the one thing I did have in terms of the leadership role was hopefully enough humility to know that I wasn't going to figure out how to morph a credit insurance company into a global warranty company on my own. And so my number one priority is really the answer to that question, which was, and the good news is I knew most of the team because we'd worked together for so long. So it wasn't like a new group of people, but that was my number one priority, was to gather that team together, have the honest conversation that, look, what got us to this place has been awesome, but we're in an industry that's going to be dramatically challenged. And so what are we going to do? And so that was, I had several inflection points along my journey. And that was one of them when, for me, it became obvious what the definition of leadership really is. And there's hundreds of definitions of leadership. I think most of them are pretty good. But for me, the single most important one is, I think leaders get paid for one thing and everything else is secondary. And that's to make choices. Some call it decisions. I like to call it choices, probably a whole separate topic, but it's choices. And everything else that we need to do and we should do is secondary. But that's when I learned that, it became obvious to me that, hey, no one was telling us what we needed to go be. We knew we didn't need to be a credit insurance company anymore. No one was saying, go do this, this. That's not what boards do. It's not what they probably should do. It was me and these, at that point, nine people in a room looking at each other saying, hey, this is it. This is, you always wonder what that secret room where they're all meeting, right? This big secret meeting with the board and all these fancy people. And all of a sudden I knew what was happening as we're all looking at each other going, what are we going to do? And so we picked the path, but my job then was to pick the right team to get to the path. So my filter became pretty simple. I call it the thoroughbred strategy, which is, and I get obsessed with sports and all this kind of stuff. So I started thinking about thoroughbred racehorses, which are typically the hardest horses to find. They're the hardest to train. They're the hardest to kind of manage, but they're thoroughbreds by nature because we give them guardrails and they're going to run their hearts out. And that's when I started developing my own people strategy. I want a bunch of thoroughbreds that will buy into this strategy, that will all go run our hearts out for these employees who have trusted us.
You talked about all the leaders being in this magical little room coming up, making choices. and the rest of the organization wondering what those choices are going to be, which gets to this idea of, yeah, you got to make strategic choices, but then you got to communicate the rationale.
That's right. Right. That's right.
To the rest of the organization. So could you talk a little bit about the importance of communication and specifically, Craig, who you identified as your key stakeholders for communicating and what were the routines that you found to be the most effective in leading this transformation?
No. And again, let me just share my bias. I mentioned to you guys before we started the show today is that I love this topic. I'm completely biased on it because for me, it literally became, I would argue, the single most important thing that I ended up taking seriously and hopefully got pretty good at, but not because I'm great at it, but because I worked at it. I think it's probably I shouldn't say it. I've done a lot of this work now external for 4 years. I'd say the most overlooked topic by senior leaders today, even up through the CEO. Right. And part of it, candidly, for me, was just ego. It's like, hey, I got the top job and I give a lot of speeches and I'm a good communicator. And, you know, and then I realized when I got out of a public company life and I started doing this privately and now I do talks, you know, for all kinds of audiences, all of a sudden it hit me. It's like those employees had to tell me it was a good speech. You know, and they had to laugh at the jokes, you know, and all of a sudden I'm like, I got to get better at this. But here's the context, Steve, that was really important to me on the communication topic was a couple of things that just moved the needle. First and foremost, I have to back up before I get to communications on the strategy thing. Part of the trap with leaders, I think, is we leave the communications to the end and we do it poorly because we spend so much doggone time, it's a technical term, on the strategy. It's like, for crying out loud, we've got smart people. I mean, you're putting people out every year from the school that can build strategy very effectively. Let's pick one. Back to choices. Can we please pick one? I would argue the differential in five strategies in organizations is about 10%. Probably, if they're all just decent strategies, about 10%. So let's pick one. That's something I'm pretty passionate about. So once we pick one, then step one for me on the communication is the clarity part of this. And again, you're a longtime pro and you guys teach this now. So correct me where I'm wrong here. This is anecdotal for me. So, and just my experience. But where I see it go wrong is on this clarity topic that We honestly believe that more is better. And even if we're a good just communicator or we're entertaining, that more is just better. And I think we all know it's not. It's the opposite of that. And so step one for me was, I'm obsessed with the number three for some reason, is I started just making myself and my leaders pick three things, no more than three things that we're ever going to communicate, preferably one. But if it's three, we got to get into one message. So we're going to have one cohesive message. And I was super fortunate, Steve. I had this guy was actually a super wise guy in the communication field, and he was more of a TV guy. He actually taught politicians how to do press conferences and stuff. And so I bumped into him a long time ago, and he taught me a message square technique that's been around forever. It's super simple, but I've never, ever stopped using it. Again, there's tons of techniques, and I think they're all very good. I would just say pick a methodology that is a forcing mechanism to make our message succinct. And the reason I love Message Square is it only gives me four corners. So I only get four proof points, right? And it has to fit on one piece of paper. So I write my message, and I do this today. I've got them all over my desk, even in conversations I've had with clients today.
Folks seem to feel that when they pick the strategy, then that's it. And that leads to a perfect segue question, Craig. You aligned your vision moving into these new categories and new segments, brought in your team. And now how do you cascade that communication from that room that you were all sitting in, setting your strategy down to not only internal stakeholders, but your key external stakeholders?
Yeah, absolutely, June. And that's what I found. Again, I'm not saying everybody has to use Message Square. There's lots of techniques, but I would really, really ask people to pick one and have the discipline to stick to it. Because what we did was we didn't leave the room until we had a cohesive message square. It sounds actually super easy. I teach this a lot now to our clients, particularly our C-suite clients and our coaching platform. And it's shocking. Everybody looks like, oh, that's easy. I kind of do that in my head. I'm like, that's great. Just pull out a piece of paper and do it. Just write for me right now. I actually challenged a very well-known good company that you guys would all recognize about a week ago on this topic, and very, very important communication, some stuff they're going through right now. And they're giving me the same thing. Oh yeah, we got this. I said, great. Just everybody take 5 minutes, just write it down and I'll do the same thing. And quite frankly, it's pretty scary, but after that exercise, they took my message square to go use for their organization. Now I don't work there, by the way, I just work with them. And so it sounds pretty simple, but that's how we cascaded it, because the key to this, I think, June, is it's the old adage of, you know, we whisper one thing to a person and they tell somebody else. And by the time it gets down to the lower levels of the organization, you know, we have a 15% growth goal and all of a sudden it turned into 45% and or half the company is going to get fired. And the last thing I would say on this is, and some, again, wise person taught me this, lots of data around it. If it's a meaningful message, you better be prepared to say it between 6 and 8 times, because that's when people are really going to get it. You know, you've been working on the strategy for 3 months and somehow you want, you know, the whole organization to get it in one quick speech. Not going to happen. 6 or 8 times.
You were saying early on that with the debt crisis of the 90s and all of a sudden your company that was in credit risk.
Yeah.
Was maybe being bemoaned as a bad apple. And as you talk about communicating and cascading that down, and now we look today in with the pandemic and COVID, how did you communicate to your employees who must have been reeling by the fact that their company was sort of being maligned in the press and that what they're doing was not valuable? And I can see that today happening as well. Do you have some advice for leaders today as you help employees move through these really troubling times when we're all home and isolated?
Absolutely, June. And it gets back to Steve's prior question on why were those style things important to me? I didn't know any other way than to be super authentic and go out to our employees and say, here's the data. Here's what our consumers say about our products. Here's the value that we add. Here's what we actually do. And be super authentic with them. That there's sometimes we get caught in the crossfire of these other things. And I'll tell you this, it was, again, one of these inflection points for me around communication, because we came through that with a higher employee engagement than we had ever had in our history, because people had to make a decision. Do they believe us, or I guess me specifically, that we really are doing a pretty noble thing? And I actually called it that because I believed it. You know, are they going to believe what they hear in the press? And we were very fortunate. We became a better company as we went through that. And it always impacted me. And I would say the same thing now in terms of this pandemic or this crisis. And one of the things I see missing today from leaders in the communication is, this better be a time where you go get to know the employees and the associates in your company. And I differentiate getting to know them from knowing about them.
Can you tell us a little bit about your new book, Unstuck?
Unstuck.
Why that title? And what you're really trying to achieve with it.
Yeah, I mean, let me just preface that I don't consider myself an author. I guess I technically am because I wrote a book, but didn't set out to write a book. About 2 years ago, we're into this GXG thing, and we had some wonderful clients basically just tell me, look, this works. It's a very unique methodology. I call it wisdom-based learning, and you should put it in a book and share it with a broader audience. And so that's all I did. It's a super simple book. I don't know if it's the best business idea because I tell everything in there, and I encourage people to do this with or without GXG, but it's what my passion is. I want people to understand there is a methodology to get unstuck. And again, I use very simple terms because, well, my friends would tell me that I'm not smart enough to use fancy terms, which is probably true, but I use them because as a leader, that's what resonated with me. It's like, hey, credit insurance is dying. We're kind of stuck here, right? And so the unstuck is just a methodology of how we can go find and activate the wisdom of others that have actually done this stuff that we're stuck on, and do it in a very thoughtful, organized way. We do it through these cool advisory boards and a coaching platform, but there's other ways to do it. And the cool part is the spirit of reciprocity is alive and well out there. People want to do this if you ask them right. So we wrote the book to tell the story, and it was a fun experience for me, but it's just a way to tell the GXG story and the unstuck story, Steve.
We have a whole school of thoroughbreds at the Darden School.
I know it. It's amazing.
And they're just waiting to get out there on the rails and run their heart out for good leaders like you.
What do you look for
in terms of an MBA's leadership and communication style when you're looking for those thoroughbreds?
Yeah, and I love the question, June, because I probably look, it might be different than a lot of people, because again, particularly coming out of Darden, these are the brightest and the sharpest that there is. So what I look for are the number one correlator, I think, of success, particularly early in work life, but it works forever, is the people that ask the question, how do I get better? It's the number one correlator. So I want to talk to people that I get a sense that they care about that question and they're going to ask it continuously, because I don't care what their starting point is. If that's the headset, they're going to be superstars and thoroughbreds. Second thing, I care about people that care about culture. I am a fanatic that companies that thrive long-term care just as much about how we do things as what we do. And culture gets super overblown. There's a million ways to come at it. That's what I care about it. So I'm looking for people that care just as much, and they're willing to ask me just as much about how we do things, not just what we do. Third thing I look for are people. I tend to test the water around personal brand, I think, along with communication, and they're very linked together. I think I want people that can quickly understand what personal branding is, why it's important, and commit to me that they're willing to work on it. Because that's what's going to link them to be great communicators, is the self-awareness of what they would like their brand to be, what it actually is, and their commitment to work on it. And so if I see those three things, I'm pretty confident that they're thoroughbreds. The last thing overarching it, I'm a huge, huge fan of Angela Duckworth's work around grit, combination of passion and perseverance. I've been using it for 15 years, way before it was cool. And she wrote the book. I read her research papers. And it meant a lot to me because it resonated with some of the success we were actually having. So I started testing people on grit scores. I'm not suggesting that you test people you're interviewing, but you get pretty good at this. If you study the topic, you can pick out people with a high grit score pretty easily. So I'm looking for a grit score, care about personal brand, care about culture, how we do things, not just what we do, and are willing to ask the question, how do I get better? You get those things, and boy, I'm a green light. Let's go.
That's fantastic, Craig. We
Listen, we can't thank you enough for your time today. A lot of great insights.
My pleasure.
CEO Voices examines the communication that enables transformational leadership. June West is Associate Professor of Business Administration and co-founder of the Darden Leadership Communication Council, along with her colleague, Steve Soltis. Soltis is the former head of executive communication at the Coca-Cola Company and lectures at Darden. This podcast is a production of the University of Virginia Darden School of Business.